Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 112, HuzzaCon 2014. So, as you may have guessed, this time around we're doing things a little differently than the past episode because I'm not going to just talk about Huzzah by myself. I wanted to get someone who knows much more than I do about this so that they can talk to all of you and explain to you why you should think about going to Huzzah, not just in 2014, but in 2015 and 2025 and so forth. So I am very delighted to say that I am joined by a very special guest who I've been excited to nail down this recording for quite a while. His name is Dean Emerson, and he is a member of the MHWA, which is the Maine Historical Wargamers Association, and they are the group that puts on the Huzzah Convention in Portland, Maine. So, Dean, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jonathan.
So, I'm really excited about Huzzah, and I've been a few times, but I know that not all of the people who listen to the show even know what Huzzah is. So why don't you just kind of explain to us what the convention is and what makes it unique?
Sure. Well, Huzzah, when we sat down as a group several years ago, we wanted a convention that really kind of focused on historical wargaming. We looked around, and there are lots of great conventions. New England, we're really lucky. We've got a lot of good gaming going on, both at the local club level as well as regional conventions, one-day events and three-day events. And I guess some of them are even longer than that. But what we thought was that there was no one that was really focusing on historical wargaming. And the group that I happen to belong to and be friends with and have pretty much my entire life have all been historical wargamers. And so we wanted something where that was the focus, the driving focus, and so that was our, you know, why we put Huzzah together.
Well, it's clear, definitely to me, and I would say to anyone who's ever been to Huzzah, that you're a group of people who have a deep knowledge of historical wargaming, but also a deep love for it. The games that are put on by people who are really interested in the different areas represented on the tabletop, are very friendly and knowledgeable and welcoming at the same time, and also very skilled, because these games, we're not just talking about playing board games, not that there's anything wrong with that, but most of them are miniatures games, and a lot of the tables that I've seen have featured homemade terrain and beautifully painted models. How many people do you think you have who are really into helping to run these games? Because it can't just be something that's one or two of you happen to do.
Oh, no. I mean, we have, this year, as an example, Huzzah has over 100 games being played or being offered. About 20 of those in the events listing are board games. And so we've got, you know, roughly 80 historical, or mostly historical games. I think there's probably 6 or 8 non-historical games in there as well, miniatures games. Because quite honestly, while historical gaming may be our passion, many of us also have complementary interests in, whether it's sci-fi gaming, zombies are always popular, of course, and board gaming. Quite honestly, many of us who have been lifelong historical gamers have also been lifelong board gamers. So that seemed like kind of a natural extension of where we started with Huzzah. When we started, it was going to be purely historical miniatures. And, you know, we've added board gaming to that because it's an interest. But you're absolutely right. Sorry, to get back to your point. Many of us are history buffs. I mean, we love military history and we read about it and we visit museums. And one of the really cool things about New England is that, you know, if you're into the American Revolutionary period or the French and Indian or King Philip's War, you know, War of 1812, you can actually go and visit these places on day trips. It's very approachable, accessible history. And so I think that all of that sort of plays into why a historical convention can work up in, an area that doesn't have the population of the Mid-Atlantic seaboard. So Yeah, we love history, and many of our game masters are also really, really into history. They love scenarios that reflect history, even if they're not straight historical scenarios. They're, you know, oftentimes inspired by something that they've read in a book, some historical action or situation. And so they bring that to the tabletop. And I'm always intrigued. I'm always fascinated by the tabletops and the some people who are really, really into the toy soldier aspect of it. Other people love to build the terrain. And the cool thing about a convention is that it sort of inspires everybody. It makes everybody reach for the next level because they want to show off their best stuff. So yeah, I think as you walk around the tabletops at Huzzah, hopefully you're struck by, you know, the quality of the presentation as well as the quality of the work behind the game that really makes the whole thing successful.
My first year at Huzzah was back in, 2010 it had to be, because it was, no, I'm sorry, 2011, because it was my first wedding anniversary, and it just so happened to be that a buddy of mine had went 2010, which I think was your first year running Huzzah. Am I right in that?
Yes.
Oh. So a buddy of mine went your first year and loved it and came back and had told me about it, and I was all excited, and then I saw the date and I was like, oh, this happens to be my wedding anniversary. Of course I can't go. Then I was like, or can I? And oddly enough, my wife, God bless her, said, sure, a trip to Portland sounds wonderful, and we can divide it up so you get to do your gaming thing, which she's always been supportive of, but not really one who understands it, or at least doesn't understand how I can be so into it. But she liked the idea of mixing it up, where there was some of that and some of just us doing the whole Portland touristy kind of thing. And so it was a huge success. And one thing that really struck me, because at this point I was used to playing in games, or as our friends across the pond might refer to them as actual participation games, as opposed to a demonstration game, which I know a lot of conventions and trade shows over there kind of focus more on the, here, let us show you how we do, instead of you actually moving the models around. But one of the things I noticed was that at Huzzah, a lot of the game masters were just so excited to have people play, and that they made it look effortless for how much work was involved. It wasn't really until I got the inspiration, as I often want to do something cool and fun and exciting, and then rope other people in with me. And my idea was, well, things looked really cool at Huzzah, why don't we try doing that at a convention closer to us? That I realized, oh, I don't really know what I got myself into, but it's a lot of work. And it can be really deceiving, I think, for people who go and attend a convention like Huzzah and see all this beautiful stuff to understand how much work goes into all of that.
Well, certainly for anybody who's not in the hobby and hasn't experienced it before, there's probably they don't see all the background work. But as you do, I mean, once you begin to get into it and you start to read a book and you find yourself inspired by a game that you see or a chapter in a book that you've read and you think, wow, that would be great to game. Then you begin to research, you know, the units that were there, and the weather and the situation and what were the causes for it. And when you start to look at things like victory conditions, I mean, one of the things that our group is sort of intrigued by is, scenarios that aren't always even, you know, we tend to go for scenarios where, you know, one side may own the tabletop at the end of the event, but the other side may have met their victory conditions. So I think you see that in a lot of historical battles where victory isn't necessarily shared, and it's not equal. Both sides didn't come to the battlefield with the same number of forces and the same unit compositions. They came, you know, the fact that they're fighting there may or may not have even been planned. And so anyway, I digress. But those are some things that make it interesting. And so then, you know, as you learn about that history, then you try to bring that into your games. And yeah, I mean, that's all part of the research that goes on that a person just walking through the convention for the first time may not see. But I think it probably comes through in the enthusiasm of the game masters, the enthusiasm of some of the participants. You know, I was just last weekend, I was at Havoc, which is a terrific show, as you know, in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. And, you know, I was playing in a day of battle game, which is, medieval system put together by Chris Parker. And there were players there who had read the scenario and then gone out on their own, and they had gone to Wikipedia and they looked up some information about the battle, and they came knowing about the battle and what was going to happen. And, you know, I mean, that was pretty cool. That showed a level of participation that, you know, I don't know if that's typical. I think it was kind of cool.
One of the things that really struck me is, like you said, about the usage and the fun that you can have, because it might not seem at first that you can actually have a lot of fun doing this, but participating in a scenario where it's not 50-50. War's not like that. You're trying to get the other guy at as huge of a disadvantage as you can, and that's not often reflected on the tabletop. But there was a game, my first year at Huzzah, it was, I think we played the Alamo, I think is what it was, yeah. And I ended up being on the side of those hardy, soon-to-be Americans, maybe someday, defending the Alamo, and I don't remember the exact victory conditions, but I remember that at the time the GM explained, all of you who are in the Alamo, you're going to die by the end of the game, but that doesn't matter. What matters is you have to do, you know, this, this, or this, and if you do that, then you win, and hooray, and don't worry about the fact that you're outnumbered like 5-1 by all these Mexicans coming over here on the table. That's okay. It was so much fun.
Yeah, that would be, that was Billy DiGiulio's 28mm Alamo game, I believe, which is really, it's a visual spectacle. It's a beautiful game, but it really does speak to that situation where we all know how the Alamo ends. So, but it's a matter of how the players can write the story and how they can influence events. I think one of the best games that I can remember, you know, even going back 20 plus years, was a fighting withdrawal. It was a Napoleonic game, and we were tasked with this fighting withdrawal. So right off the bat, I mean, you know that the other side is going to take the table by the end of the day, but could we delay? Could we cause enough, could we inflict enough casualties on them to force them to stop? Could we get them to deploy and lose time doing it so that we could get our artillery train off the table and things like that? And those can be real nail biters. Those could be great games because they present you with interesting scenarios, interesting victory conditions, and they force you to be creative and to really think about, you know, how can we take the initiative, retain the initiative at the key moments. And that's what I think really makes it fun. There's I like those challenges.
You touched on it a little bit earlier when you were talking a bit about what Huzzah is, but could you explain why it was started? Like, I could understand that you're a group of people who probably play games all the time together or often and thinking maybe it'd be cool to do something bigger, but what actually was the spark that said, hey, let's throw on a convention?
Well, I think that there's a group of us who grew up in Maine or New England, and we remember conventions that were put together by the Maine Wargamers Association, which was led by Peter Rice. And Peter was, you know, if not the father of wargaming in Maine, he was there shortly thereafter. He used to own a shop in up the coast, down east in Maine. And then he opened the Toy Soldier in Bath. And the Toy Soldier was in Bath for a couple of decades. And they ran, he organized, MaineCon, which was a convention that was held at a private school called Waynefleet. It was run in, they played in the gymnasium and in some of the classrooms. And then it moved to the University of Southern Maine Student Center. And so we remember fondly starting out as kids, playing, or probably not kids, but as teens, playing games at MaineCon. And that's where we first were introduced to things like Fletcher Pratt and firing across the gymnasium floor with World War II battleships at, you know, ranges of 30 and 40 feet or in the parking lots and things like that. And MaineCon was a mixed genre convention. It had historicals and sci-fi and fantasy and some role play. And it was a great convention, and we all remembered it really fondly. And then over the years, it was no longer viable, or people's interest changed, and then the Toy Soldier closed. Eventually, Peter had moved. And so there was always this dream this group of us had of, you know, well, wouldn't it be great if we could have a convention in Maine again? And back in probably 2008, a group of us, a core group of us, started really talking about it and thinking about, well, if we ran, we had this whole plan. We mapped it out. It was going to take us a couple years to generate enough money so that we could put a down payment in a hotel to host it. And we had sort of figured it out that if we ran X number of game days and we could get, $10 a head and X number of people, eventually we could get to this magic number that was going to give us our down payment so that we could start a 3-day convention, have it held at a hotel down in the Portland area. And that was how it all sort of started. And so we were at a friend's house. We met around his kitchen table. And we talked about forming a club and forming the club as a not-for-profit and what that would involve and what our goals were and how many events a year we were going to run and membership and, all of those kinds of things. But it was all geared towards, expanding the hobby and bringing more people into historicals, eventually getting to the point where we could run Huzzah. And then after probably the first year, we just sat back and we said, this is going to take too long. And so several people sort of reached into their family finances and gaming finances and wrote checks to get it all started. We, several people put in a fairly sizable amount of money, and we decided we were going to jumpstart the process and get our first convention started. So we did. And a big part of that, quite honestly, we tried to visit with clubs throughout New England. We went on sort of a tour, some of us. And we played with, Tom Desmond's group in Marlboro, and we played with Battle Group Boston, and we ran down to see, we went down to VicCon, and we met with Greg Belovec and the guys at Battle Group Boston and Boston Train Bands and Northern Con. We kind of went on this tour of clubs, reaching out to them saying, what would you like to see and how could you support us? And here's what, here's our vision for it and what we'd like to do. And could you help? And there was sort of a mixture of, yeah, this is great. We'd be happy to help. And are you crazy? It's historicals. It'll never fly. You need card games and whatever else. But no, I mean, generally speaking, everybody was really supportive. We made some great friends, that outreach effort of getting out and visiting with people, where they play and with their terrain and their troops and their people. That was really, it was a lot of fun. And the relationships, the friendships that we developed, have lasted for years. In fact, as I said, I was at Havoc last weekend and Vic Gregoire, as I was heading out the door, he says, "Oh, wait, I've got something for you." And he pulls out this pocket full of old photographs and he pulled out a photo of the two of us from 1994. and we were at a convention, all the way back in 1994, which was really, it was kind of cool. So that was how we got started. We literally, we had this dream. We had this memory of MainCon and what that used to be and how much fun that was for us as teens and then young adults. And we wanted to bring that back to Maine and we wanted to have a focus on historicals because there are lots and lots of great conventions around, but no one convention that we felt really focused on historicals. Havoc has a lot of historicals. I mean, they do a great job with historicals and we've been going there for decades. But we wanted something that could be ours, it could be Maine, and that really catered to the historical gamer and where that was, first and foremost. And so that's what we want to do. Well, we're not against any of the other games. We think they're all great. It's just that, we can play those other games really easily. It's easy to find a convention where I can go play Euros or I can play, sci-fi or zombies or something like that. And we love, most of us, many of the guys love games, of all different types. It's just that, when we thought about what we wanted to do and what we wanted to cater to, we thought, well, let's make it historicals because that's what brought us into the hobby and it's what we tend to gravitate to and it's where our passion is. It's what we thought we could do well. And then, as I say, we've added, we've really expanded the board gaming component of it because many of us, if not all of us, are or have been board gamers, at different times in our lives, in addition to our historical miniatures gaming or sci-fi miniatures or whatever it is. So that seemed like a complementary population and interest that we could, expand into, without diluting our interest in focus on historical miniatures games.
Would there happen to be any people that you'd like to put a spotlight on or give shout-outs to who were really key motivating forces back in the day?
Well, I mean, there's it's a great group. I mean, one of the things that we've been really lucky about is that we have a group that's really dedicated and interested, and there's so many. There's always a great number of them. Chris Penny, Henry Call, Bill DiGiulio, Chris Parker, Art Fossa, Mike Trabeau, Tim Richter, the list, it keeps going, quite honestly. Andy Niven, he's recently moved, but he was a real mover and shaker in the beginning. Dave Parker, once you start on these kinds of lists, you always run the risk of forgetting someone on the spot like this, but.
And after, I promised I wasn't going to give you any hard questions.
Yeah, well, that's all right. We're just really lucky. We've got a great group. Wayne Warner was recently president. Mike is now the incoming president. It's just a great group, and I'm really sorry if I did forget anybody, because there's just so many. I mean, I can't really name all of the people who have played a role, because it's a great group. I mean, we have, 35 or 40 members who play and participate and volunteer. And then when we run the convention, there's an even broader group that comes to the convention and helps out with various parts. Whether it's running games or volunteering or tackling different things, we've got some great painters like Ken Eckhart and Tim Richter. They run painting tables and paint and takes and paint for the games. Some of the stuff we did early on that was really kind of fun and exciting were these big group participation games where we would try to partner with a manufacturer and put together these big participation games where we would basically ship off figures to different clubs and say, here are the figures, you can have them. All we ask is that you paint them and bring them to the show and play and bring them for the game. And then afterwards you can have them, and that was a lot of fun. I mean, we did that great big Battle of Sabbath game in our first year. And we did a Viking game in the second year and we've really did a Boxer Rebellion game one year. It was a lot of fun. It was a way for us to bring lots and lots of people into a big role, for the convention. It was a big project. It was a huge project. Nothing we could have done on our own. And so it made everybody, a part of it, and a really significant part of it. So that was a lot of fun. Now those, games were, they sort of get big and they get unwieldy and afterwards you're exhausted and you wonder if it was all worth it, but they're just huge visual spectacles and the camaraderie and the fun that people have of bringing their stuff and saying, here's my Viking longship and here's this, the sails that I painted or whatever it might be really is nifty.
With the Viking game, I remember seeing people play it and thinking how amazing it was. And then after the con that year, I got to relive it because I really enjoyed, and I think you may have been point person for writing them, but if not, I know you will correct me. But there were some really great write-ups in War Games Illustrated magazine, I believe it was, that kind of talked about your journey to put on this massive game.
Yeah, that was a combination. Jim Flanagan and I, Jim did the historical background article on the burning of the historical village that it was based upon. Jim is a history teacher, high school history teacher here in Maine, and just a great, great guy, really fascinating, interesting person to talk to, and he loves history. He's the sort of history teacher that if you had a choice as a kid, like if there had been a social studies teacher or a history teacher that could have kindled an interest in a young person about history, Jim would be one of those people because he himself is just so excited about it. He gets so excited talking about it that I can only imagine him in the classroom. I think it would be great fun. So yeah, he wrote this article and he was a big part. He and Chris Penny ran the game and sort of led the charge and organized it. And it was a lot of fun, and it was everybody, you know, it's one of those things, like everybody loves Vikings. So you could get in at a level that was reasonable. You know, you didn't have to have hundreds of figures. You didn't have to bring huge units. You just had to bring your war band. And if you had a ship, then great, you know? So it was approachable. It was fun. It was light. That was great. And yeah, War Games Illustrated was terrific. They ran articles and photos, and they were pretty excited about the coverage for the game. So yeah, that was great.
I've only had a limited experience working with them, but in my limited experience, at least with the UK office, and I'm sure it is for all of them, but they were a joy. I had a guest on, John Sutherland, and he worked on this book, Mega War Games, which you may have had a chance to look at, but it was being published by War Games Illustrated, and so I was able to get in touch through him and through someone else with one of the editors who kindly shipped me a copy so I could not sound like a moron when he and I talked about it on the show.
No, that's great. You know, we always worked with Dave Taylor. He's just recently left War Games Illustrated to pursue some other interests. But Dave was terrific. I mean, he was really helpful about encouraging us to write some articles. We did a big article on the Sabbath game. He allowed us to cover the Viking game. We also did a really nice big photo spread and description of the making of the international legations for the Boxer Rebellion game. I mean, those buildings were all scratch built. Those were actually sculpted and cast by Andy Niven at his workshop in Massachusetts, and then assembled and painted and weathered and finished by volunteers within the club. So that, you know, that was a huge spread and a really pretty spectacular table. And War Games Illustrated, you know, fabulous. They did some articles sort of as we went through it, and there were some web-based articles in addition to the print articles. In fact, they just reprinted a whole series of photos from the article in the last few months. So yeah, Dave Taylor and War Games Illustrated were terrific about helping us with coverage, you know, of some of the projects that supported the con. And honestly, there are other magazines that have been terrific as well. We've been really lucky. The support from the industry for what we're doing has been pretty overwhelming. You know, Jasper at Carwanserai.
Oh, he's fantastic, isn't he?
Yeah, he's terrific. And I apologize if I just mispronounced the name of the company, but War Games Soldiers and Strategy is also a great magazine. And Jasper has been, you know, honestly, Jasper was someone who reached out and contacted us. When we were putting the Battle of Sabbath game together, I think I had posted something about it, probably on TMP. I had this picture of this giant bulging box of 3,000 or 4,000, plastic figures. And Jasper emailed me and said, you know, hey, I just read your post or your article about what you're planning to do. We have an earlier edition of Ancient Warfare magazine that has a large, where that battle was one of the, you know, the key articles. And what if I were to send you a few copies? And since then, you know, I've had a great relationship, a correspondence with Jasper over the years. He and his magazine, his publication company, have been terrific supporters as well. I haven't written for them, articles for the print magazine, but they've just been great. I mean, they're really supportive. They've provided us with prizes and also guidance and expertise and ideas for jousts and for other games. So it's been a lot of fun. And I think that's true, not just of magazines, but really, I mean, if you look at the prize support and the willingness of the industry to take our little regional convention, which is growing every year, but it's still small in the grand scheme of things, and support it, whether that be with sponsorships or prizes or, you know, guidance about games or scenarios and things like that. It's just been terrific. I can't say enough, and I could never list them all because there's just so many.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because I am by no means an expert on conventions or game conventions or even like wargaming conventions, at all. I try to get to three cons a year, and sometimes I'm successful and sometimes I'm not. For example, 2014, no matter how badly I want to, it's just not in the cards for me to make it up to you guys in Huzzah, but I will be there with you in spirit. That you can be sure. But I try to go to three cons, and each of them has a different reason for me, for being there. The first con of the year for me is always Total Con. It's a con where I go, but I don't play any games. I go to cover it, and because I get a lot of connections there. So I spend most of my time behind the scenes. And this year, for example, I got to hang out with Greg, who you mentioned from Battle Group Boston, and just some great after parties and getting to meet a lot of really cool people. And that ends up being some interesting content, or at least I think it's interesting anyway, for Wargaming Recon here. And then I try to head on over to Havoc. It's partly because it's the longest running historical game convention in New England. It's sad though at Havoc, because when I go, I'm only able to go for a short span of time. It's a multi-day event, like TotalCon is and like Huzzah is. But when I go to shop. So Havoc for me always means let's see what cool gaming things I can buy. So I don't play in that either, but I get to see some people. And so it's sad I'm not able to participate in some of that other stuff. And at the same time, it's also kind of sad because I've heard stories from years gone by when it was much, much larger and in a different venue and all sorts of other kind of stuff. So although I have a good time at Havoc, and I think a lot of people do, it feels like it's different. And then I go to Huzzah so I can play in games. And because of the incredible presence that all of you create, that you, I feel you really manage to blend very well a combination of shopping, of playing games, and of just this experience. Because Huzzah for me isn't just the con, but it's also the location that you're at. Portland is a fantastic city where you can do all sorts of stuff. For me, going to Huzzah means playing in games, but it also means getting a chance to eat my way from my house all the way up to Maine, in Maine and back, which is fantastic.
Well, Portland is a great city. Hey, a couple of things that come to mind. You know, I've been going to Havoc for, well, I guess since 1994. I didn't even know it. But that picture is stamped 1994, excuse me. So apparently I've been going there for quite a while. And I love going to Havoc. It's a great group of people and it's a great experience. And we've always had a lot of fun there and we enjoy a lot of support from them. And you know, I don't know. I mean, was it larger? Honestly, I just always remember going to it and I can't remember necessarily one year versus another year. I remember particular games. I remember, you know, particular events and things, but I always have a great time. And so, you know, I think if there's any difference between the conventions, it's probably that they've just completed their 30th annual convention without a break, and we're just about to have our fifth. So if, you know, there's a difference, my guess is that it has a lot to do with that, maybe. And, you know, so anyway, Portland is a great city, as you say. I mean, it is a foodie city. It has a lot of restaurants that are just terrific. Markets and food and restaurants. It's a great place to be. Really, Maine has developed a terrific foodie culture over the last 10 or 15 years. A restaurant in Portland just got in Brunswick just got recognized yesterday. It was one of the top 10 up-and-coming chefs in the country, Primo in Rockland, and then, as you say, Portland. Portland is just filled with great food. We actually have some people who have flown in from California for the show, a couple, who came the first 2 years, partly for the convention and to support it and to run games because he's a rules designer and publisher, and partly because his wife loves the food, the food scene. And so they came for the first 2 years and had a great time and just tried different restaurants at every meal. And I ran into him at Fallen this last year and he said, "We're coming back. We can't come in this year, but we're coming back next year. You guys have a bunch of new restaurants we want to try." So, you know, the convention, We try to do a good job, but we're certainly lucky to have a city like Portland. You know, the Sea Dogs, this year the Sea Dogs are in town that weekend. It's a great little ballpark. Hadlock Field is a great place to see a game. You're really close to the action. The ticket prices are reasonable. I think they have games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and at least one of those is a matinee game. So, you know, if people are bringing family, you've got that. You've got food. You've got museums. The hotel where we stay is the DoubleTree. It's right literally across the street from the main mall. So if people want to do shopping, you know, there's that. And yet you're only at the main mall. You're literally maybe, I don't know, 7 minutes to the old port of Portland where you've got, you know, little small craft shops, artisan shops and restaurants. And I don't know. I mean, it's a great city. So, and you've got the working waterfront there. It's a neat place and it's a fun place for families. There's a lot to do. And so by trying to, we have pushed the convention back just a little bit so that we're the weekend after Mother's Day and in hopes that, you know, there'll be a little bit more open for families. It's still a little bit of a shoulder season in Maine. It's not quite, you know, most things in Maine open after Memorial Day, but I think that mid-May will be a good time. The weather should be decent and there'll be, you know, as I said, there's baseball and food and museums and music. It's a great scene.
One of the things that I really enjoyed, and of course, I came in 2011 and 2012. When I say I mean my wife and I, but it was at the old venue, the Fireside Inn and Suites. I mean, great little venue, really homey, but was also how close you could be, like you said, to just downtown Portland and all the stuff that you could do there. Like you said, the old port was fantastic. One of the highlights, I think, of our trip. Of course, you know, if I was a real person who knew what he was doing, a real professional, I would have looked this up. But I'm a comic book geek. So there's this fantastic comic book store right in Portland down there. And one of the years it happened to be on Free Comic Book Day. So we just happened to wander in and they have this line. And I mean, it was amazing just to kind of go and soak up all the atmosphere for all the different things that are going on. And I think you really did a great job of highlighting some of the cool reasons why people should come to Hazar, and I mean, location obviously is a key component on that, but what are some of the other highlights for HazarCon in 2014 for why people really need to make sure they come this year?
Well, one of the things that, you know, this year our club game is a 28mm Polish Renaissance game. It's using the by fire and sword rules, which is a terrific set of rules. And it's a fabulous period. You know, you have this period of transition and military innovation, both in tactics, and equipment and weapons. It's going to be a great game. This is, depicting a portion of the siege of Danzig during the Swedish deluge period. And that is going to be, that's going to be a very cool game. And the visual, you know, there's just nothing like a table filled with winged hussars crashing into, you know, some poor band of peasants on the other side. But that's going to be a great game. I don't know if you saw at Havoc, there's just a great, for baseball geeks, there's a great game that is going to be brought up to Hazar as well that basically is, I'm not sure what the scale is, but it's a scale replica of Fenway with Green Monster and the Sitco sign and the whole thing. And you actually play out, you know, a famous game from whatever year. I'm not sure which year they're doing. I forget. You know, there's that. And we've got the Fletcher Pratt game. I mean, when was the last time anybody got to see 1/700 scale ships pushed across the floor in a room? I mean, it's a huge room that's just dedicated to that game for that session. And you call out your ranges and, you know, X turret, 37 feet, you know, and you play it on the floor. It's just a great game. It's fun and it takes you back to, you know, those garden games and things like that. Last year we actually had a 54mm or 60mm, garden game played on the floor with toy soldiers and matchstick cannons. And so, you know, there's some nostalgia and some great, great games. And you've always got, you know, Gordon from Adler Hobbies does a great job with the tournaments. This year he's running a Flames of War tournament. He's also running a Bolt Action tournament. That guy has, you know, like if you could bottle his energy up, it would be, well, you probably couldn't bottle it up. It would burst. But, you know, he runs great events, and his people are they're just so excited, and there's a real exuberance and interest and enthusiasm. You just can't make that up. I mean, that's one of the things that I really like about the people who come to Hazzah, is that everybody's there to have a good time. People put on their best games, and people seem to really like it, and they seem to like one another. And generally, it's got a great vibe. It's fun. Our vendors are great. We bring up, especially for a small regional show in Maine, we've got Age of Glory and Eureka Miniatures USA. I mean, Age of Glory, Steve's coming up from the Mid-Atlantic. We've got Footsore Minis this year, making their debut show. They're a new company that is sculpting some beautiful figures. We got the Hobby Bunker. He's a cornerstone of the wargaming hobby and the toy soldier collectible hobby here in New England. Matt's going to be here again. You got MSD Games, which is an interesting shop down in Connecticut, and they're going to bring a totally different set. They do some 15 millimeter Korean War stuff and some air war, but then they also have Cryomech and some sci-fi things and some Luftwaffe 46 games and things like that. Adler, obviously, you know, he's got a huge selection of Warlord products and Battlefront products. Then you got a couple of bookstores. You got Art Fossa of ADC Books. Again, he's been doing shows for decades. Great guy, very, very knowledgeable, has a great selection of books. And he really knows books, so he knows the quality of books, and he helps you find, if you want a first edition or whatever it is that you've got, you know, you need a book on a particular period, you can just sort of tell him, hey, this is what I'm looking for. And he'll go out and he'll find it. And you got Chris Parker from Day of Battle Games. People in this area know Chris and his games. He's been running medievals for forever. Who else? Brigadier's Bookshelf is my own little startup business, my own bookstore that is just getting off the ground with books and games. Who have I forgotten? Well, this year we have a new vendor called Chapman Studios, who they paint. They're going to bring a display of painted figures that'll be available for sale. Who else? I mean, off the cuff, that's it's a great variety of vendors, and we work really hard to make sure that we have complementary interests, but we try to limit the overlap. We try not to have, you know, six vendors all selling Flames of War if we can help it. And I think that, because our goal is really, we want to provide a great show, we want to have great games, we want to have great shopping opportunities, but it has to work for everybody. I mean, you can't bring 10 vendors or 11 vendors together and stick them in one space if they're all going to compete with each other. I mean, there's always a certain amount of competition, but we can limit that and help everybody by trying to craft a good variety where they're not scavenging the same product. So we give a lot of thought to that. We do our best to try to help create a convention where everybody can have a good time and everybody can be successful.
Why don't we go over, let's pretend that I am a person who's never been to Hazzah. It's my first time going in 2014. I'm really excited, but I have no idea what to expect. So why don't we go over some of like the key vital stats for people. When is Hazzah going to happen in 2014?
Hazzah runs from May 16th, 17th, and 18th. We start on Friday morning. Technically, we sort of kick it off with a very low-key impetus tournament starting at around 10 o'clock on Friday morning. And that runs all day while we're setting up and rearranging the hotel setup. And then we go, you know, first big session is Friday night, and then we run through Sunday afternoon.
So if someone wants to participate in that kind of low-key tournament startup, do they need to be pre-registered for the con?
The impetus tournament isn't even in the events list. Like, it's on the webpage, and it's there, but it's just for fun. So you don't even have to be pre-registered to get into the impetus tournament. You just have to raise your hand and say, hey, I'm curious about that.
That's good to know. Like, some conventions, they have really cool things, either like a pre-con, whatever, or like first day of the con kind of stuff. And you can only get into them if you're someone who's been able to enough to pre-reg. Because some people I find, I always try to pre-reg for things. I'm afraid stuff's going to get sold out and I want to get into what I want to get into. But some people are a little more laid back or maybe just not sure about it. So they want to come and see what it is first before they actually dive into anything. With Huzzah this year, how important would you say it is for people to pre-register if they want to get into something specific?
You know what? I have to say that pre-registration is on fire right now. We've only been open we opened on Friday. So we've only been open for pre-registration for a few days, but we have games that are already filling, and the hotel is, you know, we've been running out of rooms in our room block. Our reservations, we have a discounted rate for attendees, and it's actually, you know, we keep forcing them to add more rooms to the block, but they're close to being out of rooms. So actually pre-registration this year is really important. If you want to get into, I mean, and I know everybody says, I'm sure everybody would say that, oh, you've got to pre-register, but it really seems to have taken off this year. I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, this year we got more games than ever. We have more people pre-registering earlier, and the hotel reservations, I looked at the room list the other day, we have more people in more rooms than we have ever had. So I guess people are having a good time.
How much does it cost for someone to register for Huzzah? And then do you happen to recall how much it is per night for a hotel room at the DoubleTree?
Yeah, the weekend convention is $35 for the whole weekend. It's free for Game Master. If you run a game, you get into the show for free. Vendors get in for just their vendor fee. And so for attendees, it's $35 for the whole weekend. If you want to stay at the event hotel at the DoubleTree, it's $98 a night for a, you know, standard two double beds kind of situation. And if you want to save a few dollars and don't mind a short walk across this empty lot, is a Days Inn that's nice and clean. They do, by all accounts, they do a good job. And they were, I don't know, I want to say they were, you know, $15 or $20 less per night.
So when the first timer comes to Huzzah and they're pre-registered and they get their room booked and they're all excited, what should they expect?
The DoubleTree is this, you know, like these two turrets, basically, large, tall, round, buildings across from the main mall. And when you walk into the far turret where the convention is, I mean, you walk in and you walk into the foyer and unfortunately there's usually a line, especially if you're there Friday night or Saturday till about midday. But we run two different registration lines. That's another reason to pre-register. If you're pre-registered, your badge and your game selections are all laid out, and we run a separate line for pre-registrants to try to keep you moving and get you in and get you out and on your way to enjoying the show. And then, you know, and then we have everybody who wants to register at the door, which is obviously fine too. It's great. It just takes a little bit more time. But we also have some games right there in the foyer. Andre Krupa runs this huge, big, cool World War I airplane game, and he actually runs his own tournament there called Knights of the Sky, which is a great system. He uses Stan Kubiak's rules for that. It's a great game. It holds like 16 people, and he does trophies. Yeah, it's a great game, and Andre is a huge help to us. He does all the registration systems on the back end as far as running the event. So you walk in and you've got the big double doors ahead of you past registration, and you walk into the main ballroom, and, you know, at some level it's bedlam. There's just, you know, games, vendors tend to be along the outside walls, games and, you know, big, beautiful games all over the place. On the left-hand side, you have the tournaments, in a smaller room also to the left. We have a room that's smaller and that has really good lighting for the board gamers. Although honestly, the board gaming has really taken off, and I think next year we're going to have to get more space because I think they will have outgrown it. We have a Field of Glory tournament that runs in a separate room of its own down the hall. We have the Fletcher Pratt game in its own room. I mean, so, you know, we started off with the ballroom and one other space, and every year it sort of grows and expands. So that's what you'll see. I mean, you'll walk in and it's just, you know, for somebody who loves wargaming and historical gaming, it's just great because you walk in and you look around and you see game after game after game that you're like, wow, that looks good. Ooh, that one looks good. Oh, I wish I had gotten into that one. And so it's fun. I mean, there's just a, you know, you can sense the excitement and people are laughing and handshakes and pats on the back and having a great time.
Oh, I think if that doesn't sell it for people to come, I don't know what will. I think you've done an expert job of just really giving people a picture of what it's like to be at Huzzah and how it came to being. If I may, I have to say, for people who've never been to Huzzah, you really are missing out. I know it's not like going to Historicon or something like that, but I think it's better because there's something with a convention that's a little bit smaller where I feel like you don't get as overwhelmed and you actually can have time to enjoy what you're doing and to meet up with people and make some new friends, as opposed to being one of hundreds of thousands. You actually get to be a person and not just a number. So I think that's really important. In conventions like Huzzah are where you can do that. Anytime you can just kind of reach out and try something new and really enjoy it, it's worth taking that step. And then, of course, I don't know many wargamers who manage to convince their wives to go on their wedding anniversary to go to a gaming convention. Somehow I managed to do that, not once, but twice. So that alone, I think, should tell people that it's worth going to Huzzah. Bring your significant other, and like you said, Dean, bring your family, because there's just so much stuff that you can do while the wargamers are hanging around the table, rolling those dice, and everyone else can be out in Old Port or shopping or going to the main mall or just enjoying all the fantastic lighthouses that happen to be in Maine.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We have a good time with it, and we've developed some really close friendships over the years. We're only in our fifth year, but we feel really lucky to have the support of the groups. We couldn't have done it without the clubs from throughout the area. They've been great, and so yeah, we're excited. We're off for another year, and it's only a few weeks away now, and here we go.
So if people want to keep up to date with all the things going on for Huzzah and also for yourself, how would they do that? What's the best way?
Well, there's a couple of web pages to go to. www.huzzahcon.com, HUZZAHCON.com is the kind of the official convention webpage, and you can get, you know, registration information and vendors and sponsors and all that sort of stuff. All that information is available there. We also have a Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/huzzahcon. And we also, you know, as we play with different versions of social media, we also have a Huzzah discussion group on Facebook. And those are where you'll see, you know, those have been a lot of fun. Quite honestly, the discussion group in particular has been fun because that's where, you know, people are posting pictures of the prizes that they're putting together for the tournaments or pictures of their in-progress work on their terrain, you know, pictures of their play tests. And so that's a very cool place to go because you get to sort of get a preview of what might be at the show, what you might see when you come to Huzzah. And that's been a lot of fun. The Huzzah discussion group on Facebook is probably the most interesting and interactive place to get information about the show. And I have to say, I'd also, sorry to throw this in, but I would also like to thank our sponsor, Shipyard Brewing Company. They've been, you know, they basically make a big donation to us every year to help run the show and provide t-shirts to the convention goers. And that's been a lot of fun. I think that, they've been great, and it's also been, it's been kind of fun. You know, people seem pretty jazzed about the Shipyard sponsorship every year.
Well, and they also make really tasty beverages for adults that you can consume while gaming. So that's
it's kind of interesting. You know, I mean, it's, I mean, it's true. We have both a selection of tasty beverages, alcoholic and non-alcoholic. They also do some great, you know, old fashioned sodas if people are into, soda as well. So yeah, we try to offer a little bit of everything.
My first year at Huzzah, and I know I keep on saying my first year at, but my first year at Huzzah, one of my buddies, the one who went the first year, his name's Adrian, he's like, oh, so what do you want to drink? And I was like, what do you mean what I want to drink? We're gaming. Of course, I don't want anything right now. And he's like, no, the bar is right there. What do you want? And so he goes, he gets something, and it turns out he got whatever the Shipyard beverage was that was being promoted by Shipyard at the time, and brought it over. And I still remember we were playing in the Boston Train Bands game, Battle of Lusty, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
And we're there doing 28mm black powder, and I just look at him, and we both have our adult beverage in our hand, and we're like, you know what? This is just, it's great, because you're able to relax, have something tasty, play some games, and, I mean, what more can you want? Because often I think war gamers are so used to gaming either solo or at home, which is great. I'm lucky enough here at our house, we bought a new house last year, that it has a finished basement where I game in once a month. I try to get together with people and we do that sort of thing. But if you're out and about or try to game with more people, you can't fit everyone in your home, but you can at a convention or something or at a game store. And most game stores don't encourage or not licensed for that sort of thing. But if you go to a place like Huzzah, the hotel is licensed. So you're able to enjoy all aspects of the hobby, whatever they happen to be.
Yeah, that's been something people really seem to like. I mean, the vendors, we get some interesting feedback. The vendors really like being in the room with the games for the most part. It's rare that we get a question about, you know, the vendors being in a separate space. They seem to like being where the action is. So they can watch the games. Sometimes they can play in them, and they too can have a drink or bring in their lunch or whatever it is. And the players love it. I mean, they like the ability to go over to the bar and get something to drink and go back to the game and play. It's a, you know, it's a nice, relaxed, comfortable sort of atmosphere.
So you mentioned HuzzahCon.com for people who enjoy going to a website, and then both the Facebook page and the Facebook discussion group. Do you happen to have any sort of online presence for your startup?
Just a Facebook page. It's Brigadier's Bookshelf. And so it's facebook.com/Brigadier's Bookshelf. Yeah, thanks. I hadn't been savvy enough to suggest that.
Well, I didn't want you to feel like you had to just be like, let me talk about this or whatever. But I think it's important because I've seen some of the stuff on the Facebook page for that as well. And it looks really good. And I'm all about trying to promote and just push out there people, places, and things that I love and that I think are really valuable. I never have anyone on the show or anything on the show that isn't good or that I don't think is worth other people's time. So when there's something cool, I really try to make sure that I shove it in people's faces, I guess would be an impolite way of saying it. Basically, look, something cool and shiny. You should pay attention to that for a little while.
And we'll talk about something cool and shiny. I have to say that the folks over at the By Fire and Sword rules publishers, they have been great. I mean, not only is the rule system just fabulous and the period beautiful and fun to play, but this year's t-shirt, you know, as I said earlier, Shipyard sponsors us and they put their Joshua Chamberlain logo on the back of the shirt. But on the front of the shirt, we always put some sort of convention artwork. And so this year we're lucky enough to have, you know, permission to use their logo for that you see on the By Fire and Sword, rule book that basically By Fire and Sword logo with the winged hussars, you know, about to run you down sort of, artwork on the front. And we also have some additional artwork that we're pulling together for some surprise, pieces at the show. And that's about all I can say at the moment, but it's going to be very cool. And those guys, they have been great. Their artists are fabulous, and they have been really supportive of us. You know, basically, I mean, we're running their game as our sort of our club's contribution to the show. But they've really been great with allowing us to use their artwork. I think people who go, there'll be a lot of pictures. It's going to be very cool.
So, Dean, one of the things that I really like about, of course, Huzzah, but also we had been talking about Havoc, is that there's a certain group of wargamers who are thankfully close enough to me that I'm able to sometimes go to some of their events, and they've really been very supportive of wargaming in general and got me really excited about Black Powder. And I'm talking about the Boston trained bands that they hang out at the Hobby Bunker in Malden, Mass. I know they always run really cool events at Huzzah. Do you happen to know, do they have anything fun and amazing coming up for 2014?
Yeah, you know, Boston trained bands is, they're a great club. Rich Clayton and the guys are a lot of fun, and they always do something spectacular for the convention. Last year they did this Battle of Leipzig game. It was a huge game. It was spread across six separate playing tables, 28 millimeter Black Powder, similar to our participation games. They had people from all over the area bringing troops, commands to play in the game. And that was the entire Sunday. I mean, I don't think I've seen at a regional show so many people still at the tables in the afternoon of a Sunday, you know, the last day of the convention. And this year, yeah, they're bringing back, this year they're doing a Battle of Paris 1814 game, which I don't think it's physically quite as large. I don't think it's going to occupy six separate tables. Rich now has a baby, so that may have impacted his ability to put on that sort of mega game.
That's not allowed.
But yeah, this year they're going to do this Battle of Paris game. They're also, I mean, they're doing a, you know, if you go through the list, the events list, you'll see all kinds of games, put on by the Boston trained bands. And then next year, he's already looking at next year. He's talking about doing the 100 Days campaign, being the anniversary of the Battle of Waterloo. So yeah, Boston trained bands have been great. I also, you know, last year, I don't know if this was a smaller game, but it was a beautiful game. Bergie, Chris Berganzi put on this 28 millimeter bolt action game that was a scenario that was actually written for us by Leo Barron, who was one of the authors of No Silent Night, the Christmas Battle for Bastogne. He wrote this scenario for bolt action, 28 millimeter. And Bergie built the terrain, did this beautiful battle board, snow-covered, snowscape, and ran it for us. And that was another Boston trained bands game. It was just fabulous. So yeah, those guys, they're tops.
Like I had said back in, I think it was 2011, I played in their Battle of Alesti at Huzzah. It was around that time I was really getting excited about Black Powder. And I covered some of the, I didn't talk about the game so much, but I covered some of my confusion with things back in episode 111 of my show, where I talked about how I became a wargamer. But I made the jump from playing like sci-fi fantasy Games Workshop kind of games and went into historicals, and I was just confused because I didn't know what to do. And Henry Hyde of Miniatures War Games set me straight, but Battle of Alesti was the first chance I actually had to play Black Powder with people who knew what they were doing. And so it got me really, really excited about it. And just through making connections with some of the guys there, in particular Bergie, like you said, and of course Rich Clayton, both of them generously had agreed that they would be happy sometime to come down from where they lived at the time and come all the way down to Southern Mass and put on a game for my buddies and me and whoever else might happen to be interested. So they did that, and Bergie was sick at the time, so he wasn't able to come, but Rich came down to Abington, Massachusetts to a fantastic game store, Battleground Games and Hobbies, and they put on this Black Powder Rev War game. Well, he put on, and we all had so much fun. It was a blast, and I think it just kind of goes to show how nice and welcoming they are and how they really care about promoting the hobby and just having fun. I can't think of very many people, no matter how nice they are, who'd be like, yeah, I'll drive half an hour, 45 minutes to put on a game so your friends and you can play. But he did. So
yeah, and you know, we actually at our for talking about Rich and his willingness to drive, you know, he actually came to our club holiday party, which was our sort of our post holiday party. We run it every year, and he and Kat, his wife, and their newborn all drove all the way over to Chris Penny's home in Hollis, Maine, braving, you know, ice and sleet and snow. We were in the middle of a blizzard. We almost had to cancel the party, but But, you know, they drove through all of that to join us for dinner. And, they're great. And he gives a tremendous amount to the hobby. And, you know, one other thing, you asked me earlier about, you know, like what some inspiration or whatever for convention and why did we want to do this? And as we have been talking, one of the other things I remember early was this small show that was put on by a couple of the members of the Northern Conspiracy, which is called Tricon. And Tricon was a great small convention that was held in Concord, Mass. They had an author there sometimes. They'd have presentations, some great games, and every year we would drive down for it. I just happened to be thinking about that. That was another great, you know, for historical gamers, that was another great, great event that, you know, ended too soon, quite honestly. I think they only did, I don't know, maybe five or fewer. And, but it was a great show and we remembered it. We talk about it still sometimes.
Well, for anyone who happens to be interested in the Boston Train Bands, because they of course run stuff at Huzzah and I know they run stuff at Havoc, and I think they may even be thinking of in the future running something at TotalCon. I think is something that they had mentioned. But you can find out more about them on the web. We'll have information and the link to them in our show notes. Because they do game days and stuff in Massachusetts. So if you're ever in the area, yeah, you should be sure to check them out. And it gives you a taste for what you can find at their kind of events at Huzzah.
Yeah, I think they've already put out the date. Their big game day in August has been publicized. That's another great event. It's, you know, two or three sessions on a Saturday in August right there at the Hobby Bunker. I mean, that's another great time.
Well, I am very happy that we got a chance to talk not only about Huzzah and all the other cool things we did, but also about the Boston Train Bands. They are a favorite group of mine. I don't get to spend as much time with them as I would like, but whenever I do get to spend time with them, it's always memorable. Well, Dean, was there anything I didn't bring up or anything else that you would like to cover for this episode of Wargaming Recon?
You know, I'm sure that as soon as we hang up, I'm going to have like a list of a dozen things I should have said. But mostly, I'd just like to say thanks. It's been a lot of fun, and you know, I've never done a podcast before. So I appreciate your help and your facilitation and leadership in the conversation. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure having you on. And I just want to say that should you or anyone else happen to come up with anything that they want to share or say about this episode, of course, sending feedback is the best way to do it. We love Facebook, and that would be the best way to do it. You can find us by going to wargamingforums.com/Facebook or email address cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Those are our big two. We have a phone number and all that other kind of stuff that you can reach out to us at, and you'll hear that as usual in the credits for this episode. I just want to say thank you again, Dean. This has been something that I've been looking forward to for a while, and I was hesitant at first, actually, and by now I should learn not to be hesitant about this kind of stuff, but I was hesitant about even approaching you because I figured you would just be so busy that you wouldn't even have the time with the convention coming up to spend an hour or so with me to talk about things. And I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't say anything, and maybe I should, and then I'm glad I did.
So am I. It's been a lot of fun, and I love to talk about the show and about the hobby. It's a great hobby that we love. So,
well, I'll say, it would be a pleasure, of course, to have you on again sometime down the road. This went really, really well.
Great. Well, thanks.
Well, I want to thank everyone, of course, for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. This is episode 112, and like I said, don't be shy. Be sure to send your feedback, constructive criticism, comments all to us, and a great way to see all the stuff that we talked about here in this episode of Wargaming Recon. And of course, to get the ways to get in touch with us would be to head to our show notes. Please head to wargamingforums.com/WR112. That's wargamingforums.com/WR112. So thank you everyone once again for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. As always, you know the deal. We'll be back next time with another episode of Wargaming Recon. And until then, no matter what's going on in your lives, no matter how busy you are, no matter how tough work is, just remember, you have to, you need to, you gotta keep on gaming. It's become a common occurrence here on Wargaming Recon for me to do a little bit of a mailbag section, kind of just share some of the feedback with you that we get. Like I've said earlier in this episode, love getting your feedback. Any constructive criticism or comments or feedback that you just want to share, love getting it. You can find out how you can send that to us by going to wargamingforums.com/WR112 for the show notes for this episode. So for this time, for mailbag, I have a couple bits of information that came to us via Facebook. You might see that there's this theme showing up in the mailbag sections of late, that Facebook is playing quite a role for people to get in touch with us. So listener Adam happened to share on Facebook that he blogged on his Fencing Frog blog about the Raid on Pitt's Landing game. That was something that we covered and that had a lot of fun running at TotalCon 2014 and covered in an earlier episode of Wargaming Recon. So it was nice to see Adam share that information, and thank you, Adam, for posting that on Facebook and tagging us so that we could see it. It was a lot of fun, and Adam had done a fantastic job of painting these armies in plastic, 54mm French plastic toy soldiers for the game. So that was just really cool. And then also, Peter Blix Bryant promoted the show on his video podcast, The Mythwits. Blix came on here and he did a fantastic job for episode 110, Meet the Mythwits podcast. So I want to thank Blix for spreading the word. And then also in relation to that episode, we got another piece of mail, as it were, from the TotalCon, Total Confusion, the fantastic gaming convention in Mansfield, Massachusetts. They posted on Facebook and spread the word, actually, as it were, to all of their fans and to say that, quote, two great podcasts, Wargaming Recon and Mythwits, that had both covered TotalCon, recently hooked up to bring you on, I think they meant one heck of a good show. And they were, again, referring to episode 110, Meet the Mythwits podcast. It was a lot of fun for me to chat and hang out virtually with Blix and just kind of talk about his new endeavor and why it would be of interest to wargamers like you and me. So I can definitely tell you that I believe sometime during the summer of 2014, I will be a guest on the Mythwits. And as I find out more and all the scheduling gets ironed out, I'll be sure to share that information with you on social media and on the show and all that kind of stuff. And then I've been pushing this, and I would say with good cause, and I think people are really into it, is that new for 2014 and something that I really want to continue is this whole episode plan thing where you head on over to wargamingforums.com, go on the web, open up your favorite web browser, and you go to wargamingforums.com, and we have the episode plan. You can just hover over the podcast part of our page. It's at the top in black, and click on episode plan. And we'll have a link in the show notes, don't worry. So you don't have to remember that. But it lists all the episodes that will be released for 2014, the 2014 season. And then when it becomes 2015 for the 2015 season, and the 2016 season, and the 2050 season, if I'm still alive by then, it'll show all that kind of stuff there. And so it shows the episodes that had been released, and it shows what dates new episodes will be coming out. So, for example, on April 28th, episode 113 will come out, and that's where I'm going to discuss and answer the question, or attempt to answer it anyway, are painted minis essential to miniatures wargaming? And then May 12th, episode 114, I do a Wargamer's Survival Guide to Kickstarter. So the cool thing about this episode guide is that you can go on, you can see what's in the pipe, as it were. I might have show titles, I might have names of guests who are going to be on an episode, or just a theme. I might just say, American War of Independence, and go. And that's what that episode will be on. Or, for example, November 10th, episode 127, I say Holiday Gift Guide. I know I'm going to do the Holiday Gift Guide then. Another cool thing is that you can see the total number of episodes planned for the podcasting year. So for 2014, I had planned to give you 23 new episodes. And then I'm going to do something cool. I'm going to do best of episodes. And I used to hate that, actually, when you get near the end of the year and you turn on the radio, maybe you have a favorite morning show or like a drive home commute radio show that you like. And then they do like the best of so-and-so and so-and-so. And you're like, didn't I hear that already? But there's something cool with this. And that is, I traditionally take a break from creating new content from the last half of December of each year to the beginning of January. It's because there's Christmas and my birthday, and then it's a new year, and just like all this kind of stuff. And I use that as a chance to recharge my batteries and then come up with ideas to create new content for you to listen to in the new year. So instead of just having that dead space and as it gets closer and closer saying, don't forget, there's not going to be anything for you to listen to. Don't forget. Stay away. I'm basically saying, turn off and don't come back. Don't listen to me. That's not really a good thing to do. What I'm going to be doing is I will have two episodes on December 22nd, which is my birthday, and January 5th. Those two episodes will be best of episodes. So I will probably maybe try to tie in some sort of poll or have it be listener generated and pick two episodes that are best of and maybe really set the tone for the 2014 year and release one on the 22nd of December and one on January 5th. And then the 2015 podcasting season will begin with episode 130 on January 19th. No, you don't have to remember all of this. Don't worry. Important bit is go to the show notes, worldgamingforums.com/WR112. You can find out about the mailbag, and then you can find out and get a link to the episode plan, the episode guide, and see what's coming up down the road. So thank you again, and I hate to say it, but the credits are coming. You can hear all the stuff. I probably repeated myself a little bit in the credits. And then we will be back next time. It'll be episode 113. Are painted minis essential to miniatures wargaming? I think I'm going to get some feedback about that. Hopefully I don't make too many people mad. So we'll see how that goes. Thank you again, everyone. And I hope you have a great time gaming and listening to this show and doing all sorts of other cool wargaming things. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.